Dave Wilbur, Peter McCormick, tag teaming on life, health, and turf, unscripted.
Okay, welcome to round eight.
Jeez.
Wilbur and McCormick. Tag team unscripted, just the two of us this week after having a guest appearance last time by Walter.
Yeah, Walter was Wilbur. Here last week.
Did you know his name was really Walter Wilbur?
Walter Wilbur. Walter Wrinkles, we've been calling him. And Walter Woods Wrinkles, Walter Wilbur Woods Wrinkles.
How's he doing?
He's doing great. He's when I got him, he was 10 pounds, just about 11, right? Now he's 17.
Really?
So,
and you've had him what, 3 weeks now?
3 weeks now, yeah. So he's growing, and had a quick vet check last week, and everything's good. And he's doing great. He's smart, and of course everybody thinks their kid's the smartest kid, right? But he
your kid.
He's learning, you know, some basic commands, come sit, stay, and kennel, you know, for his kennel. He gets right in there.
Yeah.
And the other dogs are being amazing. Like, you know, this morning, it was the three-way dog play thing, and the other dogs are just being great with him. And they're teaching him a lot. They're teaching him how to be a dog. So,
That's important. Puppies at that age, I'm convinced, are the fastest growing organisms on Earth.
Yeah, I don't know if it's going to show. See my hand?
Oh, the puppy bites.
So I've been working with him to get his mouth softer, you know, and it's taking a little bit of time. But, you know, somebody told me, you know, their mouth is the first thing that works when they're born.
Is that right?
Right. Their eyes are closed. Their ears are, you know, not quite going, but their mouth is the first thing. So everything has to be examined with the mouth. Huh. You know, everything has to be put in their mouth. And if you get mad and upset about that, then you're kind of going against what their biology is, right? So, So I've been working on, you know, getting his mouth softer, but also not being upset when everything he sees has got to go in his mouth first, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's part of being a puppy.
Yeah. But
we have a riot. Exciting news as well on the dog that our rescue pup, so to speak, who is seven months old and 50 pounds now, is as we speak, this is Kobe. He is on the transport van.
Wow.
Headed from Georgia, and we will pick him up in New Hampshire late tomorrow afternoon. Long trip for him, but
so that picture that you sent me, I hope you put it up, but it's like,
put it up.
That van is like, what does it say? Like 5,000 animals transported. I mean, that's what they do. Yeah, huh?
That's what they do.
Had no idea that something like that existed.
Well, it's a big thing down south. There are a lot of, you know, most of the available dogs that we see on, you know, the internet sites and stuff like that here are either still located in the South or have recently been brought up
from
the South for whatever reason.
Right. Well, yeah, Worf, my German Shepherd, was found in Houston and brought up here by a rescue. You can hear the little guy crying.
I read somewhere that the city of Houston typically has something like 200,000 stray dogs. It's just a ridiculous number of dogs. Now, Marley, our dear departed Marley, who was a mutt, came up from this same woman who fostered Kobe. And she's not an official rescue. She rescues boxers herself, but somehow or another she came across
Kobe,
somebody who had this dog and, you know, shouldn't have had this dog. And it was the same thing with Marley before. But then we got our current golden Ellie came from Kentucky, as did Frosty. So all of the last four of ours have come from.
Yeah, Walter's mom came from New Mexico to the rescue here, and was talking with the vet about this the other day, because they were saying that you know, Colorado is one of those places that dogs want to live, because here the dog culture here is everybody has a dog, right?
Yeah,
or two. and they're all in their cars, and it's just, you know, it's very dog friendly here. You know, many of the places that we go are dog friendly.
Cafes and coffee houses and all that stuff.
The dogs are there. Yeah. And
it's cool.
It's a cool place to be a dog, right? So I guess a lot of the rescues, you know, are looking for those dogs in the South and at other places. You know, I follow a guy named Niall Harbison on Twitter.
Yeah,
from Thailand.
Thailand, yeah.
Who rescues dogs in Thailand. And man, the dogs that he rescues are in rough shape.
Yeah.
And what a neat guy, you know? So, yeah.
If you follow them, his rescues that he places go around the world.
They go around the world, yeah.
There were two of them that were, that went to Ireland a couple of weeks ago. I saw that he had stuff. That is so cool. All right.
Yeah.
Before we get into the glimmers, I got to show you a couple of things.
Okay.
From Christmas. okay. This was a gift from my daughters.
You're going to be okay here?
Yes.
Oh, look at that. Frosty.
Yes.
Frosty.
And this.
So now, is that a photo or an art piece?
That is a watercolor.
Okay.
That what they do is, and actually, so they gave me one of Marley also.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Marley.
From before. Yeah, yeah. Okay, you can tell that's watercolor. Yeah,
we used to joke that she kind of looked like Yoda. So with those ears, she had Yoda ears. But in any case, they sprung that on me Christmas Day, and I was surprised, shocked, and it just, you know, I lost it. I lost it again.
I bet. Yeah.
And the other thing that's pretty cool, I don't know whether I can show you this, but this.
They did a dog carving. Is that Frosty?
This is a wooden carving that's done by a now retired sculptor who lives about 15 miles from here in Vermont. And he recently retired, shut down his
dog sculpting practice.
Yeah, whatever you call it. But
right.
He had my daughter Erin is friends with him, and she has these things are freaking expensive too.
I mean, oh, I'm sure
that would be something like $800.
Yeah,
and she has three of them for some of her dogs, and she happened to go to his sort of liquidation thing and picked up a lot of stuff, including this one. For pennies on the dollar, but
really, wow,
yeah, it's cool to have.
Wow, so I reached out to my tattoo artist to see if we could do something for Bruce on me. Right? Do you know
what? You got any space left?
So, I got tons of space. I'm a big guy. So my artist sent me to another artist because she doesn't do that kind of work, right? But she goes, "Oh, I know who you should talk to." Right? So I reached out to him. And that's what he does. He does fine line portrait work.
Yeah.
Right. It's like $800 to do Bruce on my leg.
Really?
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I mean, you know, I don't tattoo artists are, but he's like, it just takes a long time and, you know, I want to get it right. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, but then he's booked out more than 8 months.
Really?
So he's like, my first available appointment is June, July, something like that. You know, do you want in? Send me a deposit. You know,
that's money I'll gladly save.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't get the tat thing myself, but I'm an old man. So,
well, I like my ink, you know. But I'm not sure I want to take Bruce around. I don't know. I'll think it through. You know.
You know, I saw something on Twitter the other day that. Somebody had posted a series of pictures of high school kids with full sleeve tattoos.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I saw a lot of
these
that.
These are football players and stuff.
Yeah,
now, what the hell are these parents thinking?
Listen,
I'm serious, though. I'm serious. To me, that's just absurd. But
I know for me, I don't have any ink on me that when I'm 80, I'm going to be disappointed with.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It tells my story. It tells a lot of them are from places that I've been.
Right.
And around the world and stuff. So I don't, you know, I'm not, there's no Kermit the Frog cartoons or anything like that on me and right. stuff like that. I used to see the kids get weird tattoos and you know, I don't, I think there's some sort of your mom and dad or somebody, a guardian has to go with you in Colorado.
Or sign off on it or something. Something but even yeah. so, what is wrong with these parents? Jesus.
I don't know. But yeah, I saw some pretty nice, pretty expensive ink, you know, too. I mean, I know what it costs to, yeah. you know, to do it right. But then some of it was just silly, you know, a name, right? A girlfriend's name. Come on, when you're 17, you're going to put yeah, your girlfriend's well,
the,
name
the
on
the
your...
The classic you know. Ones, you know, going back, it used to be sailors from the yeah. Navy. They would yeah, get yeah. them, and it would be an anchor, or it would be somebody's name with a heart and an arrow shot through it, you know. Yeah, mom. that kind of thing. But it's certainly taken over the culture. In any case, let's right. get into some glimmers.
Yeah.
Give me a glimmer. Last time we were on here was before Christmas.
Okay. Yes.
Right. So we've
that's right.
There's a lot of opportunity for glimmers.
Man, where do I start?
Kind of the way I feel.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's been a lot of good. I mean, obviously the puppy has been, you know, joyful and fun and has kept me from, and I hope you have this experience with Kobe. I mean, it, as much as I miss Bruce, you know, I've been consumed with, you yeah. know, dealing with the pup, right? So that's been something special. Let's see. Santa brought me a pizza oven for Christmas.
We'll Santa. Talk about that. Like that.
And I know you're into that too. And it, man, has that been a lot of fun, you know, making some pizzas in the back,
no
the
doubt.
Back porch.
Change your so, life.
Yeah. So that's been a good glimmer. And then, you know, work wise, just some, you know, some really good things happening. We heard the other day, I don't know how much I can talk about this, but we heard the other day at Turf Rad that Old Tom Capital, which is a group that I don't know if you know about them, but Old Tom no. Capital is a kind of a VC group that specializes in golf and golf related things.
Really?
And we had made a proposal to Old Tom Capital for some, you know, VC money or whatever. And, mm-hmm. and Turf Rad got accepted.
Cool.
And part of that I think had to do with a cool little short video that I made that I was, you know, that I didn't, you know, it just really came from my heart, you know, and it was something that they sent as part of the package. And a lot of people really reacted to it. You know, it was my voice and, you know, that.
We should say that this podcast is presented by Turf Rag.
Yeah.
Who are quietly changing the moisture management game on fine turf surfaces.
I think so. Yeah.
I also happen to be Dave's employer, but that's, you know, that's all good. That's all good.
Well,
so not to get ahead of ourselves, but in our next session, we will be having our first guest.
Yeah.
Who will be David Collier, I believe, who is director of sales and service for Firefly Automatics. Firefly.
Yeah.
The manufacturer yeah. of the AMP or AMP, I don't know whether they're spelling it out or
right.
staying at the robotic fairway mower that's, you know, really been kind of making a big splash.
A big splash.
Yeah. So yeah. that's going to be cool.
Dave and I are also on the program for the Northern California, Sierra Nevada equipment tech
yeah.
thing that happens every year that they've been doing that's really popular there.
That's coming up in a few weeks, right?
Yeah, I'm there in a couple of weeks in Sacramento. And
well, we're going to have to get Dave's this in the, before that.
Dave's on the program with me, so I'm looking forward to meeting him in person.
And well, you're
I think it's really cool of them to be progressive and invite a few of us that are, you know, I'm specifically talking to equipment managers about what all of this technology is going to mean to their jobs.
Yeah.
Right? So I'm going to go over kind of, you know, what I'm seeing as far as, you know, the kinds of things and that equipment managers are going to face with all this new tech that's showing up.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to this. It's a new talk for me. Like, you know, I've got some stuff in the can that I do, you know, a lot, mental health and all that, but this is new. So I'm excited. Yeah. Well,
you know, now that you mentioned that, and again, we're kind of getting ahead of ourselves because we got to go back to Glimmers. But in any case,
right.
Talk about the new and expanding realm of equipment technicians or car mechanics or whatever it is.
Right.
The tire shop in town here, well, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 years ago, really embraced this whole EV servicing stuff and really carved out a niche for themselves.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But now they also realized that there's an opportunity to service all of these cameras and all this stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
All that stuff that, and they actually built a new facility in a couple towns north of here.
Really?
And I think they're going to be the only non-dealer service facility for all this kind of stuff in the state of Vermont. So,
wow.
You know, that's evolving, on a lot of different levels, both certainly within turf, but, you know. And by the way, I think those cameras and sensors and all that stuff is really what's driving up the cost of car insurance too. Because,
you know,
doesn't take much to total a car anymore.
That's true. That there are, but there's another side to that, Peter, that I've been hearing about in the insurance world, which is that, you know, when you take the human element out of things, you know, and that. You know, it's possible that in time, the rate will go down. The rates will go down because the accident
because
rates
of
will
accident
go lower.
Avoidance.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, I get that. Yeah.
And also because, like, you know, my friend's Tesla, the cameras are on all the time. So if somebody vandalizes the car or whatever, you have pictures of it all. You know, things like that. Or, you know, somebody bangs into the thing in a parking lot.
I guess. I was referring more to just straight out collision.
Yeah. Well, no, things are more expensive. There's no doubt about that. I mean, look at what a fully loaded Lincoln Navigator costs now. I saw that the other day. I couldn't believe it.
Well, we're going to go out a little further on this. But,
yeah, right.
just prior to Christmas. Now, Patty drives 2014 Volkswagen Golf TDI diesel. Six-speed turbo. Okay.
Wow.
We picked this up used in 2017. I think it was the Volkswagen had a
political when they had all the trouble with the TDI stuff. Yeah.
With the miles per gallon ratings or something. So they had to buy back thousands of cars. So, we figured she wanted a 6-speed, she wanted a turbo, whatever. So we picked this up. Well, right before Christmas, the clutch just disintegrates.
Uh-huh.
$4,200.
To do a clutch?
To do a clutch.
You're kidding me.
Well, I'll tell you exactly what was involved. And it doesn't really matter, but
it was transmission too, or
flywheel. The flywheel alone, the part alone was $1,261.
Oh my God.
The clutch kit was $819. And I don't know, but
and the labor was twice that. Yeah sure.
Whatever. Just insane. Wow. In any case, let's get back to Glimmers.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to throw one at you.
Okay.
Christmas Eve, we went up to daughter B's house, Erin. She lives about an hour north of here, up just north of Burlington, Vermont. And the question was, and Colleen and Matt were here, her husband were here, so we all, four of us drove up. And question was, do you want dinner or do you want heavy appetizers?
Okay.
Well, is there ever a question? You know, we'll go with the heavy appetizers.
Okay.
So.
Right?
Sorry.
That would be my choice, yeah.
Mini lobster rolls.
What?
Yeah. And these, she made these crostini, you know, bread slices that she grilled. And then on them, she put sliced marinated beef, beef tips or tri-tips.
Oh, my God.
On that. And on top of that went caramelized onion with very caramelized onion with balsamic vinegar.
Oh, my God. That's one of my favorite tastes. And
on top of that, on top of that went truffle oil.
Oh, brilliant.
Now, wow. You want to talk about blowing your head apart. So I'm right. thinking, and there were quite a few other things. I mean, she had this whole spread laid out there. And I'm thinking, this would cost, if the six of us went out to a restaurant, this would cost $1,000.
Sure, of course.
Easy.
Well, even without alcohol.
right. So, yeah. I mean, to me, it was just underscored my disappointment, I guess, or my underwhelmment with a lot of restaurants these days, because we can do better at home.
Yeah,
a lot
yeah,
of times, you know,
we can too.
Now the next day, they came down here and I cooked.
Okay,
we cooked, and I did a tenderloin on the grill that I had marinated for 2 days prior. I get a whole tenderloin.
Right.
And I trim it and I sort of section it up. So you've okay. got, you know, the little stuff, and then you got the big chunks too.
Right.
So I marinated in balsamic vinegar, garlic, rosemary, and olive oil.
Wow.
And wow. a little mustard thrown in there.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I put it in a Ziploc bag. I stuff it all in a Ziploc bag and push all the air out and then zip yeah. it up so that it's, you know, the marinade is always in contact with,
right.
with the beef. And it was out of this world. I mean,
sure.
you know, even the big fat chunks.
Yeah.
They're tough to do on a grill.
Yeah, that's right.
And, so I actually saved them for the next day because I had enough of the smaller pieces. And we have our family tastes range from medium well to almost walking still. And, yeah. you know, and by sectioning it up like that, you can do that, moving it around the grill and stuff. But this big fat piece, the next day when I sliced that, it was uniformly pink.
Wow.
From edge to edge, all wow. the way through.
Wow.
Because I took, you know, I took it off and then wrapped it in foil and let it sit too, which
but sure.
it was outstanding.
Yeah. Well, the thing you can't do with the tenderloin is ever let it bleed.
No.
You know, it's got to rest yeah. after it's cooked for a long time. That's yeah. cool, man.
You know, wow. you choke a little bit on, you know, spending $150 for a piece of meat, but that's, you know, that's cocktails at a restaurant. So.
Well, there's no waste on that.
No, we got 2.5 meals out of that, and even a chunk left over for Ellie, our lone remaining golden. She got some of that right, in her food for a couple of days.
Good
so.
For her.
yeah.
Well, I love to cook, and you know, grew up in the restaurant. My dad was a chef, and I just, you know, stuff like that makes me happy, right? That's a good glimmer. I like it.
I've got one more that
go
I want to share with you. So I think I mentioned before that Patty's birthday is the 27th of December. And,
oh, right. That's right.
Rather yeah. than doing the obligatory fine dining for six people and spending $800 to $1,000. A few years ago, we just said, nah, we're not doing that anymore.
Right.
We're going to do an activity.
Okay.
Ilk. And then we'll find a tavern or pub or something to go to lunch, have a nice lunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good. So this year, Aaron arranged for us to go to the Trapp Family Lodge, which is in Stowe, Vermont.
Okay.
And Stowe is kind of like the Vale.
Skiville.
Yeah. It's the Vale or Aspen or Jackson Hole of Vermont. You know, and this Trapp family lodge is the Sound of Music family or the descendants of those people.
The Von Trapps.
Right. 2,500 acres. And it was beautiful. So what she did was they have sleigh rides. They're horse-drawn sleigh rides.
Okay. Wow.
All right. So she hooked us up with that. We got up there before lunch and just a gorgeous day. It had snowed prior. So there was probably 10 inches, maybe a foot of snow on the ground. And it was 16 degrees, but brilliant sun and no wind.
Okay.
So we weren't freezing at all. It was very comfortable. She's sitting next to me and we're getting ready to, you know, everybody's loading up in this sleigh.
Right.
And she's looking around and she says, "This is so cool. I've never done this before." This is, look at this. This is beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of the first time we went to a Boston Bruins game at TD Garden and we were down by the glass.
Okay.
Instead of up
in the nosebleeds.
Yeah. And she's just looking around, taking it all in, you know. And I just got the biggest kick out of that. So.
Oh, that's so cool. Wow.
Yeah.
What a thing. I love that kind of stuff. I mean, I grew up in an area that was ski area, you know, type thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, but we, you know, we also, my parents had a restaurant. We also ranched. We were partners in a ranch and I was a horse kid. You know, I was big into horses. So one of the things that used to happen every winter is that we had, do you know what ski joring is? You ever hear of that?
No.
So basically what it is that you get a horse and a long rope and then you pull somebody on skis, you know, through a course or with the drag race type thing or whatever. So, you know, a bunch of my friends were, you know, class skiers, right? Like Olympic, you know, some of them went to the Olympics and stuff. And then, you know, I had horses. And so we used to bring our horses and pull these guys, you know, as part of a, you know, kind of winter carnival kind of thing.
So this is straight line skiing or is this like slalom?
We did both. There was a course, you know, to go through and there was also just like the full on drag race, you know.
I'm guessing today that would be more amenable to snowboarding.
Yeah, I think snowboarding, that kind of wasn't happening there. Just, you know, it was just getting started by the time I left. Yeah. But I loved it, man. We used to just, you know, just have somebody grab the whole end of a rope and the horse is going at a dead run and they're on skis hanging on. And it's just funny, right? It's just but some friends, what I'm getting at is some friends had some draft horses and they did the sleigh thing and all that. And it's so cool. You know, it's just so cool.
I don't think I'd ever been on one either. I mean, I've been on a carriage with wheels, but not on a...
Yeah.
You know, a regular sleigh.
Something different about a sleigh with the runners and just the way it sounds.
And it was such a beautiful day. You know, ironically, like 2 or 3 days later, it was 52 degrees and raining and just gross weather-wise for 3 or 4 days. And, you know, we just scratched our head and how did we ever thread the needle and get that beautiful, perfect day?
Well, that's a good glimmer.
I guess it was meant to be, you know.
That's a great glimmer. Yeah.
So my post-Christmas suggestion to the family was, you know, because the girls tend to get a little overboard with gifts and stuff. And I said, let's do half of this next
year. Okay. Half.
Let's not go crazy. Let's do half.
Okay.
You know, maybe one gift per person.
Okay. Not,
meaning Patty and I will each give a gift to everybody else and vice versa. You know, so everybody's still got, you know, 6 or 8 gifts to open. It's not like you're
right.
But to me, that makes it's a little more controlled, a little less hectic, a little bit, less nuts. But
I get, as I get older, I'm less into things and more into experiences.
Well, no doubt.
You know,
no
I got enough things.
No right? doubt.
Yeah. Although some things are cool, but I just, you know, experience counts. Right. So that's really amazing.
Well, you know, last time we were together, I relayed the story of my struggles with the Christmas tree stands.
Which was funny.
And my resulting fury, if you were, and I regret to admit it that I just, you know, as soon as Colleen and Matt left after Christmas, I had there were a couple of our floor tiles in the kitchen that were loose and they were popping when you walked on them, and it drove me crazy. This is right in front of the sink.
Okay.
And I'm thinking, all right, well, how the hell am I going to fix this? So there's this stuff called fix a floor, I think it is. And it's almost like Elmer's glue in a whatever the hell thing.
An injector kind of thing?
Well, it's in like a grease gun.
Yeah, okay.
Tube.
Yeah,
okay. So the deal is that you drill these eighth-inch holes down just below the height of the tile.
Yeah.
And then you inject this stuff in there, and it finds its way around and comes out the other hole, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know. Well, idiot that I am, figured that I would I don't need to, you know, put the tape on the drill bit. I'll just eyeball it.
Oh, boy.
Well, I forgot that we have radiant heat under the floor.
No.
Yes.
You didn't.
So I nicked one of the PEX tubes. Oh. Next thing I know, I've got water in my face. And this is a Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. Lesson learned, don't ever start any project on a Sunday.
On a Sunday afternoon.
And preferably not afternoon either.
You know, right.
Give yourself the whole day.
If you're going to screw something up, don't do it on Sunday.
So, you know, this, I'm thinking, all right, how the hell am I going to fix this? So, I ran down, shut the water off and all that stuff. Yeah, I did. There's a young guy, he's, I don't know, 35, something like that, young, who helped me paint the house a few years ago and has done some kind of handyman type stuff for us.
Yeah.
So I called him. He said, I'll be right there. Oh, okay.
Wow.
Wow. 20 minutes later, here he was.
Small town Vermont, yeah.
We figured out, you know, how to attack this thing. I had to remove two tiles.
Of course.
I had to cut down in there. The next day I went to get some PEX fittings and was able to splice it together. But in the interim, there were two adjacent tiles cracked. I don't know how that was. And I don't have any replacement tiles.
Right.
What the hell am I going to do now?
Oh boy. These things grow into tentacles.
So I said, all right, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take one, or I had hoped that I could take two from under the refrigerator.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. Yeah.
And I happened to go into the paint/tile store into town, and they went down in their basement and came up with two 12 by 12s that didn't match, but they were semi-close.
Okay.
Or under the fridge, they were fine.
Right.
Well, it turned out there was only one complete 12 by 12 square under the fridge, because the rest of them were either sticking out or they were up against the wall and had
staggering. Right. Yeah.
So I had to take one out of the closet in our mudroom too, which I didn't really want to do. But long story short, I put about between 12 and 15 hours.
Right.
And about $500.
Right.
Into fixing this friggin' screw up. I just
for nicking the the tubing in there.
You know, just for being stupid in the beginning and not putting the tape on there to, you know, as a depth guide. Jesus. Here's the glimmer with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, where's the bright spot in this? Because so far,
as pissed off as I got about those Christmas tree stands,
yeah,
I went through this whole catastrophe,
yeah,
on an even keel. Didn't get pissed off.
Wow,
it was even. I said to Patty, I said, "How about me going and fixing all that crap right without getting pissed off?" She said, "I was going to say." That's a big turnaround, but I've been working on that. I have, because nice. I have to, and, nice. And we're going to talk about in a future thing. We're going to talk about a podcast that I just listened to.
Oh yeah, the one you sent me.
Yes.
Okay.
That is life changing. Far as I'm concerned, for me. But in any case,
I haven't listened yet, so I can't wait.
Yeah, we'll get to that another time. Tell me about your pizza.
Oh, man. Well, you know, these Uni pizza ovens are something amazing, you know, because it's just simplicity, right? And that's, I mean, let's back up a little bit. I've always wanted to build a pizza oven, you know, like a real brick.
Yeah.
You know, put the fire in the back kind of thing. And I've just never had the place or the space to do it. I actually know a guy here in Denver that's what he does. And it's funny the way they do it, Peter, is he takes like a yoga ball kind of thing.
Oh, and
lays this brick around it.
Yeah.
You know, and then deflates the yoga ball. And there's the thing. I mean, it's really brilliant how he does it. Right. But it's expensive, you know, to do right.
And it's always in the way when you're not using it.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, where am I going to put this? How's this going to work?
Yeah.
You know, and obviously it has to be outdoors and that sort of stuff. And then, you know, you got to light the wood and all this. So here's this, you know, here's the Uni with its gas thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, it ignites with a piezo igniter. It does it on its own and off it goes. And the thing gets up to, you know, it's Colorado, right? So it's been cold outside when I've used it, but you know, my stone gets up to about 600 degrees. The oven itself gets up to about 900, you know, which is my dad always talked about doing pizzas that nobody ever uses high enough heat, right? That's the key.
Did you get an infrared thermometer?
Yeah. I have one. And so that was easy. And so, you know, I'm pretty good with dough and bread and all that sort of stuff. So I got some pizza flour, made a batch of dough. Did it at kind of a lower hydration, you know, than we usually do in Colorado because there's, you know, an altitude thing here and dry climate and stuff. So I kind of adjusted a little bit. And
so because of that, you go lower hydration rather than higher?
Usually higher.
Oh, higher, right.
Usually higher here, you know, for me.
Yeah, but
bread is a whole different thing. So, you know, I'm kind of gathering up how I'm going to do this. I've got to, you know, get ingredients is, you know, just going to do this right. And Julie and I were just trying to figure out, you know, what we wanted this to be. And so, you know, the batch of dough came out good. I don't think I'm very good at, you know, I certainly can't toss the pizza, but, you know, getting it thin enough.
Yeah.
You know, and all that sort of stuff. So, and you had given me great advice, you know, here's how to run the temperature and stuff, but still the damn thing cooks so fast. I mean, the first pizza that I threw in there was about 12 inch pizza and it was done in 90 seconds.
That's yeah.
And I'm turning it the whole time.
You got to make sure that you take it and rotate it.
Yeah. I'm turning it the whole time. And again, the design of this thing is really cool because you've got a hot side on one side and a hot side in the back, you know? And so you can move, you know, the thing around and it's just like a pizza oven ought to work, right? Because every wood fired oven has a cold spot and a hot spot. And, you know, you got to learn that stuff. So, man, I'll tell you what a good thing. And just so good, right? Just fun and good. And
so what kind of toppings did you use?
So I did one with just some straight grated mozzarella and tomato sauce.
Fresh.
Fresh, yeah.
Fresh mozzarella.
No. That one just had grated right. regular mozzarella that we stuff. Get.
Yeah.
And then did one margarita pizza, you know, with tomatoes and fresh mozzarella and basil.
Yeah.
Right. And then did another one with pepperoni and a combination of fresh mozzarella and the other mozzarella, because that's kind of what we had. And
man,
just so good. That was just a great, you know, New Year's Eve kind of thing. And I'd gotten a stand, you know, because me, I got to get all the gear, right? I got to have all the stuff.
You need a
You got to have a pizza peel. You got to have that, you know.
Yeah.
And still, you know, didn't really have the right serving tray. I bought some little round, you know, things to throw pizza onto. This is great. So then last night, I didn't have time to make dough yesterday. So we got some dough from Trader Joe's, right? Like a garlic and herb pizza dough that Trader Joe's sells. But that stuff was, I mean, first of all, I probably didn't let it get to room temperature enough, so it was harder to work.
Yeah.
And then whatever flour they're using, that thing or whatever, it just, you know, it was more like bread, right? It just blew up as soon as I got it in the heat. So that, you know, so you got these big old bubbles, you know, on the edge. And
probably been fermenting.
Yeah, it seemed like it was in really good shape, but it just was cold. It didn't stretch very well, so I may have been too thick on the edges. But and again, just a various set of toppings. And I'm going to conquer this thing, man. I'm going to make it.
It's just like
with the smoker. You know, I had to do a couple of briskets before I got it right. You know,
yeah.
And you got to make some mistakes. You know, I definitely overcooked a couple of edges and.
It's a learning curve, but the thing with this pizza is that even if you smoke the crust and it's all charred, it still tastes great.
I know I couldn't believe that because I let one go way too far. It's like, wow, this still tastes good. You know,
I made one up at our summer place that I had bought a commercial whole wheat dough, and this thing just got smoked within a minute. The entire exposed crust was just black.
Right.
Which regular crust won't do. So for any of you guys out there or girls or whomever who struggle with commercial dough, if you're making your own pizza and you're struggling with commercial dough and you try to stretch it and it keeps contracting back in and you stretch and it keeps contracting back in. That can be alleviated if you take it out of the fridge.
Yeah, it's got to be.
You know, I give it 4 or 5, even 6 hours sometime to let it come up to, and it'll be a lot more workable.
Right.
That way. Right. I remember struggling with that long before I got the Oni ovens. I recall struggling with that.
Yeah, well, and that's, you know, I know the rules, and that my first batch was, it never did go in the fridge. You know, I had it on the rise. It rose overnight at room temperature, you know, which you can do, I think, with double hot pizza flour. But
but you can't let it go 2 or 3 days like it would.
No.
Yeah.
No, I would have had to refrigerate it.
That's what I do when I refrigerate it. I'll make it 2 or 3 days ahead of time, refrigerate it, let it, and use less yeast. And then, take it out, ball it up, and let it bloom.
So then I saw a thing about a guy in New York, you know, with his New York pizza, right? A real pizza guy, not a pretend backyard pizza guy, who insists that using cake flour is the way to go.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm gonna try that. I've got some here. He says that the gluten's higher in cake flour, and it makes a better. Makes a better situation, so I want to check that out. You know, I'm not sure what to think about that.
It's definitely a learning curve, but also an opportunity for trial and error and exploration. Yeah. And one of the things I found is that when you really get it right, the dough and stuff, you know, I try to write down what I did.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That's what my dad did. You know, my dad always said that his profession was cooking, but his hobby was baking. Right? Like he was always messing with bread and pastries and stuff, you know, because that's what he wanted to figure out the most. And he said early in his career, he worked in France and he worked in Austria and he was trying to figure out pastry. So he kind of went back to his roots. And so he always wrote down, you know, when stuff worked. And I got all of his notes and stuff. Some of them are illegible. I don't know what the hell he was writing, But my dad's recipes sometimes too, because of commercial, you know, commercial recipes, you know, 20 pounds of this and 30 pounds of that. Yeah. And, you know, it's like, it's impossible to his cinnamon roll recipe. I have never been able to fix because I can't figure out the right proportions for a small batch. You know, he's doing cinnamon rolls for 100 people. You know, so with a, you know, with a Hobart mixer and all, you know, and commercial ovens and stuff. So I never really got that straight. But
one other thing. Now, my daughter, Erin, daughter B, gave me a for Christmas. And this is kind of part of what I'm talking about and going a little crazy. This is box that's, I don't know, 18 by 18 by 24. And it weighs like 40 pounds. What the hell is in this? She had gone to King Arthur Flour, which is in Vermont. She went
into Vermont.
She went into their store there and got all this stuff, you know, pizza related stuff.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. But one of the other things in there that was not pizza related, and I don't know whether she got this at King Arthur or not, but it was a tub of, I think it's Maldon, M-A-L-D-O-N. Mm-hmm. Finishing salt.
Yeah, Maldon salt, right.
I had never heard of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Colleen says to me in this smart-ass tone that, you know, she might have gotten from me, might not. She says, oh, and you call yourself a cook?
And you don't know Maldon salt.
And I don't know Maldon salt. To which I replied, no, I don't call myself a cook. I'm a chef. No, just kidding. But in any case, I didn't know anything about this. Never heard it. So I used it that Christmas meal with the tenderloin and the you know, the carrot casserole and all the other stuff we do. And of course you have to, you grab a pinch of it like this.
Yeah.
And of course in the Jamie, what's his name? Jamie Oliver fashion. He always takes the stuff and
it's got to fall at
so
a certain speed to enter. Yeah.
And it's amazing to me the difference that makes.
Right.
It gives a little, and you do it right before you serve it. So it gives a little bit of a crunch. It gives a little bite, bite.
Yeah.
And it was outstanding. Now, you know, I'm going on 100 years old, and I've never heard of this. Now, how the hell's that happen?
Salt is an interesting thing. You know, in agronomy, we say salt for all kinds of the wrong reasons.
Yeah,
But it, you know, in cooking, I took a class in San Francisco on some cooking stuff, and the first class, all we did was taste about 20 different salts.
Really?
Yeah. To understand the difference between, you know, the Morton salt and a sea salt and a Maldon salt and a, you know, so you really get it, right? And it starts to really make sense, you know, as you're going through this. What kosher salt? When do you use
this? Yeah, I don't use Morton salt at all. I use almost kosher salt almost exclusively, although I do use sea salt in the pizza dough.
But you can feel how it hits your tongue, and you know how these different, you know, there was a gray salt, I forget, but you know, some kind of special sea salt that they had, and a black one and stuff. And then, you know, somebody told me once that Thomas Keller, the famous chef Thomas Keller, the French Laundry and all that sort of stuff, that he used to carry around a little wooden box. And even when he would eat somewhere else, he had little finishing salt that he would put on stuff just to make it his, you know, just to make it his own. So
that just opened up a whole new world of stuff that,
there's some good books out there and some really
crazy.
It's a big deal. You know, it really is, especially in the world of sauces and all that sort of stuff, you know,
and there's a difference between seasoning while you're cooking.
Yeah, yeah.
With salt. Yeah. And then compared to just finishing this little bit over the top.
Yeah, different. You'd use a finishing salt is a different thing.
It's kind of like it's kind of more of a flake.
Yeah.
At least this Malden
exactly.
salt was. Yeah.
And then my dad used to teach me that, you know, that seasoning along the way, right? So there's the brining kind of thing where you pre-season a prime rib or something like that. Yeah. But then as soon as something comes to temperature, you want to season a little bit, and then and then through the process and continue to, you know, to do that up until the end.
Yeah.
And you may use three different salts to get that done, you know, even for simple vegetables and stuff. So I remember learning that from Dad. He always had a bunch of different salt. I didn't, you know, I wish I'd have learned more from him. You know, he didn't, I think I've told you this. He didn't encourage me to be in the kitchen. He didn't want me to have that life. He thought it was too hard and too brutal.
I don't know how anybody does that. There's a big difference between doing something as an avocation or a hobby compared to doing it for a living. I mean, I love to cook, but I could not imagine doing it in a commercial kitchen.
Ugh. Well, later in life, you know, I asked him, I said, hey, how come, because he taught me a few things, but a lot of it was, you know, he'd brush off my questions or whatever. And then, but then later in life, when I was starting to learn to cook, really learn to cook, you know, I could call him up and ask him any question. And he always had the answer.
Yeah.
So we were at a family gathering, and, you know, once when I was probably 35 or 40, I said, hey, I've got, you know, how come you didn't, you know, encourage me to go into the culinary arts and, you know, restaurant hospitality and stuff? I mean, you know, and he goes, because I wanted a better life for you than what I had, you know? And he pulled back his sleeve and showed me all his burn scars and stuff. And he said, you know, it's just, I didn't want you to have this. And I said, well, Jesus, I'm involved in, you know, greenkeeping, right? I mean, it's got its own set of dangers. You know, I've got a cut up thumb and stuff. And he goes, yeah, he says, I was a little surprised when you chose that. But at the same time, you know, agriculture's in the family too. But it's like, you know, he just didn't want me in the kitchen.
I got a couple other things on my mind. Starting Monday, today's January 4th. So starting January 6th, I'm going to sit in on Paul McCormick's Mindful Superintendent Leadership Masterclass.
Oh, that's right. That's happening.
Yes. And I'm very excited about that. Not so much from the leadership thing, because, you know, my stage in life, who the hell cares about being a leader? But mindfulness stuff.
He's doing this on Zoom, right?
I'm assuming so. Yeah.
Yeah. So how did you sign up, or what do you, is it still?
It's still available. Yeah. It's still there. If you go to, what's it? Mindful Isle.
Mindful Isle is his website.
Is it? Yeah. And if you look at the under courses or classes or something like that.
Yeah.
Plus, if you follow him on Twitter, he's got.
It's there.
So,
and on,
yeah, so
and
this, on is an, LinkedIn. This is an 8-week thing. He did a series with us. I think it was a 6-week series on TurfNet, and had to be 5 or 6 years ago. And I think we had 8 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great because, you know, not everybody shares a whole awful lot, but you really get to know these other guys pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, and he told me he's got 25 people signed up.
Really?
For this thing. Yeah, which is awesome.
Good for him, man.
Yeah. So
maybe I better do. I didn't do it before because I was, you know, I was working during the hours that he was doing it. So
I don't know what the time is. I'm assuming it's probably early afternoon or whatever. Eastern. Although he's Atlantic time. But in any case, and the other thing is, now if you look at the website, it says $399 registration fee. That's Canadian money.
So that's, what is that? Less,
that's
20%.
$275 US these days with the exchange. Yeah.
Worth it.
For eight sessions?
Are you kidding me?
No.
What's a therapy session cost?
Yeah.
Well, Paul's great. I mean, what a great guy. How did you discover him for TurfNet? I mean, how did he get started with you?
He was working as a superintendent on Prince Edward Island.
Right. Yeah.
And I know he had lost his job, which resonates with me a lot.
Sure.
Having had that experience several times. And, you know, I guess I reached out to him and we, you know, we started talking. And then one summer, because our summer place is not that far as the crow flies, but it takes, it's a good 6-hour drive to get up to Prince Edward Island. We had never been before. So we did that beautiful place.
Yeah.
And, you know, we stopped and visited with Paul there. And, you know, beyond that, I'm not really sure.
Huh. How interesting.
Yeah. So,
because when he first started writing the Mindful Superintendent, you know, blog, it was just fascinating to me. It's always been fascinating to me. He's a fascinating guy.
Yeah, he's very introspective. You know, got his thumb on the pulse of a lot of different things. And so that's going to be good. I think he is still accepting other registrants. And even if you listen to this after the fact and you miss one session, I'm pretty sure he would accept somebody in registering, you know, after the first one or whatever.
Sure, 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 sure.
The other thing that's on my mind is Jim Husting.
Yeah, boy.
Now, yeah. Jim was a superintendent in California forever, was 32 years at Woodbridge Golf and Country Club or Woodbridge. Yep.
In Lodi, in California.
Lodi, yeah.
Yeah, and Woodbridge, he would correct you and say it was Woodbridge, actually. It's you know, but it's near Lodi.
TurfNet member for a long time, very active in the forum. You know, we got to know one another that way, but would only see each other at the beer and pretzels things.
The beer and pretzels, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I'll never forget this, but he used to bring his wife and two kids.
And his kids, yeah.
The kids are probably 30 now, but they were, you know, four or five, something like that.
Yeah.
And at the end of the night, he would bring them up and he would have the kids reach out, shake my hand, and thank me for, you know, for the party, whatever.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that. I mean, it was so cool. And so in any case, Jim died, December 20th, I think.
Pancreatic cancer.
Yeah, that's my father died from that, man. That's a kiss of death.
Yeah, it's a tough road. And Jim was a good friend of mine. He was, you know, I was superintendent a couple hours, an hour and a half north of him.
Yeah.
And we were on the Sierra Nevada board together, California board together. You know, we kind of came up in the business together. He was Corey Eastwood's assistant at Green Hills Country Club in the Bay Area.
Right. Yeah.
And then went to Woodbridge and did a fantastic job at Woodbridge. Interesting place to grow grass is kind of a, you know, could be hot weather transition zone kind of thing, but also near a river and stuff. It was just a great golf course. It's 27 holes and a unique
Central
membership.
Valley, right?
Central Valley. Yeah.
Which can get hotter than hell down.
Yeah. It could. And then there is also the Delta breeze. And again, his golf course was right next to the McCollumy River. So there'd be humidity from all that. And then, you know, Jim just did a fantastic job there. And then he got very into government relations for the state and for the chapter. And at first it was kind of like, you know, what are you doing? Like, why are you bothering with this? But then, you know, he really kicked the door open for a lot of us to go visit the Capitol and do some of those things early on and talk about water and stuff like that with our representatives. And, you know, I went to several, he organized several things where we all got our coats and ties on and went to the state Capitol and met representatives and people and lobbyists and stuff like that. And I love Jim. He was very, very opinionated, kind of sometimes very way too opinionated, you know.
I don't think everybody loved him, but
no, he was a polarizing guy. He was a polarizing type character, you know. Well, I remember his daughter, the Sierra Nevada chapter gave his daughter a legacy type scholarship, you know?
Yeah.
And she was just so appreciative and such a lady about the whole thing. And, you know, and it goes to that thing that you said about the kids shaking everybody's hands and all that. And
Did you ever notice one thing? I don't know why, but I always got this, he didn't do it purposely, but physically he channeled Jackson Brown.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so.
He had that kind of Jackson Brown thing going on. And it just reminded me of Jackson Brown for some reason or another.
He liked music. I think he liked the Grateful Dead and stuff too. We used to talk about music a lot, but he liked his wine. Woodbridge is a big wine area.
Yeah.
And Jim knew wine inside and out, you know, sometimes a little too well. the Sierra Pacific thing that you spoke at the one year, and Jim had a few too many glasses of wine and got outspoken, and you know, I'd kind of slide
just a few
to
more
him.
People off.
Maybe yeah, I kind of slide up to him and say, Jim, why don't you cool it a little bit, you know? So yeah, I love the guy, and it was just sad to hear that news, you know. Peter, you know, I guess that's kind of that started, I think, a little bit with John Scott and just some of these people that have passed, and you know, people that were, you know, influential in my career coming up. It's hard to see him go, you know.
Yeah, I mean, right now there's sort of a spate of people retiring.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was kind of one of them.
Yeah, but even within the last year or so, there have been quite a few guys retiring. And
calling it quits.
That's you know, good for them. Kind of too bad for, you know, for the rest of the group who's hanging. But, man, when they start dying, that really sucks.
Yeah, it does.
Anything else on your mind?
I don't know. I have this, as you well know, I have this love-hate relationship with conference season and conferences and all that stuff. And I'm already having anxiety about going to the GCSA. That's just a hard one for me. It's an ADHD nightmare. You know, I can't possibly, there's just, you know, there's so many people and so many things and so much going on. And it's just really bananas for my brain.
I never thought about it from that perspective.
It's a complete nightmare for me.
Well, it probably won't be as much because, you know, as the show is downsized.
That may be true.
But, you know, compared to, I remember going to Orlando and having three complete rooms.
Halls. Yeah.
You know, you couldn't get around it. I don't think it's that way anymore.
You know, I hate saying no to anybody. And so it's like, can you go to dinner? You know, and you get 19 dinner and invites, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
And then this is hard for me, but some people that I maybe haven't seen on a regular basis, all of a sudden when I see them, I know who they are, but their name slips my head and it makes me feel, you know, so it's the ADHD thing. It's the same reason why I don't go to the grocery store or Home Depot or any of that stuff. Cause it just, you know, there's just too much going on, you know? So it's hard for me. And then I don't know, I've lost all this weight, so I don't really have clothes that really fit me right. So I have to kind of deal with that. And I don't even know, you know, I don't feel the big need to, you know, to dress up and be sharp. You know, I'm not 25 anymore looking for the next big gig. So I have no idea how to handle, you know, what Wilbur's going to look like. And, you know, plus I don't have any hair anymore, you know, just all that.
Get some comfortable clothes and run with it. That's all, you know, like you said.
Yeah.
Don't sweat the impression. As long as it's clean and reasonably pressed.
But I'm excited about being there on behalf of Turf Rad and to talk to people at Turf Rad and stuff. You know, I like what I'm doing right now. It's a good thing. And I'm grateful to meet up with some old friends and, you know, Joel Simmons invited me to his Earthworks thing. I mean, it's cool. You know, that stuff is cool, but it's just, it's a little hard on my brain. And I find myself being completely wiped out at the end of the day.
There's no doubt that, you know, that just beats you up something terrible. And it's only, what, 2 days or a day and a half?
A couple days. Yeah.
It's not the 2.5 days it used to be.
Yeah.
But you got to pace yourself. And, you know, the nighttime stuff will really come back to bite you in the ass if you let it. And then, if you're flying, by the time you get home, you spend 3 or 4 days on the couch trying to regroup.
Yeah.
You get sick.
Yeah. And then the inevitable post-conference sickness happens. I know. And
if it's not the handshakes.
Sounds very negative, but.
If it's not the handshakes, it's the shitty air in the airplanes.
It's happened to me every time. I've never been to a national where I haven't come home and had some sort of sickness.
So
that's what's going on. And I've got the conference to speak at for the Sierra Nevada Supers and the NorCal Supers in, you know, a couple of weeks. And I'm excited about that, but it's the same deal. It's January, it's Denver. I got to, you know, navigate the plane flight thing. You know, I may or may not get out of here kind of thing. You know, it's just that I have to kind of take that with a grain of salt. It's a little different than when I lived in Northern California and the weather was mostly good.
Yeah.
You know, it can be winter here, Peter.
Could be.
Yeah.
All right. We've overstayed our welcome today. I may have to get in this thing and do a little snipping and trimming.
No, come on. Don't edit. Jeez.
But in any case, we are going to do the ding, ding, ding on this episode. Dave, always great speaking with you and sharing experiences. And
I'm looking forward to our first guest or a couple of guests.
Yeah.
And maybe we ought to get Paul on here with us one day.
I've thought about that.
Yeah, that might be a good one. We were talking about him. But I love what we're doing. People love what we're doing. They're watching, listening, I guess.
Yeah, well, if they don't, that's okay.
I get a lot of feedback.
If they don't, I enjoy it, and it's beneficial and therapeutic for me. So that's always a good thing. All right. Until next time, Dave.
Ding, ding.
Yeah. Enjoy yourself and make some good pizza.
Right.